Hi, this is Paul Warne, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Corey along with you today. Jason's unable to join me, but I'm not alone. In the hosting seat is Jack Bryan, is with me at Rams Review HQ as we dissect everything to do with Derby County, because it would be odd if we didn't, being as this is a Derby County focused show. So that would be odd and probably something you would be expecting to listen to if you just started talking about, like, who's the best James Bond ever? Like, I don't know. That's not something that we're going to talk about right now. But we're not alone, Jack. We've got Gab Sutton, EFL expert and EFL journalist, along with us to chat about Derby County, to chat about the wider picture as a whole as we try to open up our aperture. And I feel like this is a good inflection point in the season to do so, because Derby did win last night against Northampton. We're going to talk about that very briefly. But when you look at the league table, we're 15 league games in, so it's a good inflection point to try to look at it. We've got FA Cup action and an EFL Cup game against the mighty Wolves under 21 team, which I still have thoughts about why under 21 teams are playing in men's football competitions. I get it, but I also don't think it's right. That's fine. That's a matter for another thing, another time. But Gab, welcome back to the Rams Review Podcast. You've been on here a few times, friend of the podcast, obviously. If you're not, well, you are now anyway. Just lie and make me feel good about myself. Gab, I want to talk to you about Derby County. 15 games into the season, Derby are currently, after results last night, and Blackpool currently two down, are currently sitting in seventh, 24 points. That's 11 points off the top of the table. A couple weeks ago, a few days ago, it was all doom and gloom as we lost 3-1 to Stevenage. Rather embarrassing, I think. And there were a lot of calls for Paul Warne to go, for him to be sacked, this, that, and the other. Owner came out, gave him the, I guess, liked, but also kind of dreaded, like, we support him fully. But this time it didn't feel like we support him fully and then we're going to sack him. This was like, we support him fully because I don't know whether we have money to sack him or not. Gab, from somebody who follows Derby County and all of the EFL, but not as a, I wouldn't say as a Derby County fan, let's open up our aperture here. After 15 games, Derby County, where they are in the league table, 24 points, seventh position. What are your thoughts?
Sean Connery. No, I think for me, I look at Derby County and performances like that 4-0 win over Northampton, by the way. On one hand, I think you've got to give Paul Warne lots of credit for that, because first of all, Northampton are no mugs. I saw them against Leyton Orient a couple of weeks ago. I thought they played really well, and they have been playing, you know, probably better than their position for much of the season. So for you to dominate that way, obviously got to give Warne the credit. But I think I sort of flip it another way, and maybe this is, you know, a little bit unfair. You know, tell me what your perspective is. But I almost think performances like that one and the one against Exeter almost make me think that when Derby don't turn up in the other games, like the 3-1 loss against Stevenage and things like that, you sort of thinking to yourself, where was that Derby team? And that's kind of where I am on Derby at the moment, because I think as much as I don't want to be sort of inconsistent about it or criticise one after a win and a great performance, because that will be mad. But there is sort of a feeling of I'm trying to work get out a little bit, and hopefully you can sort of build on that 4-0 win and start to put a run together, because I think when you've got a squad that's championship capable, top six is the minimum expectation, and those are the standards that Warne and the management team are going to be held to.
Jack, consistently inconsistent is the way I can describe Derby's first 15 league games of the season. We go to Bloomfield Road against the Blackpool team that had been recently relegated and smashed them to oblivion. But then rock up to the Lemex Stadium in front of what, 1,200 people or something like that, and a dog, I guess, and lose 3-1 to Stevenage. Thoughts on the opening 15 games, Jack?
As you say, it's consistently inconsistent. I mean, that is the phrase to sum up the season. It's just so hot and cold. I mean, I did see something yesterday saying that after 15 games, we were in the same position last season. We were seventh, which is interesting considering how we thought of that then.
Sorry, do you mind me jumping in on that, Jack? Because I think you've kind of got to judge this as a very different type of season.
Oh, it is. It's completely different. It's just interesting in terms of the results. It feels how different it feels. And I think that's because you're not straight out of admin. They've had more than 4 weeks to put a team together. Absolutely. But that completely caught me off guard, to be honest. Because it, you know, I put a tweet out Saturday night and I said, you know, there are 5 points off playoffs with two games in hand. Now that's even for a team that were expected to challenge the top two, that's not dire, that's recoverable, absolutely. But what was alarming is the level of performance, and in that sense, on Saturday night, when you're hearing time to go chants from the away end, the end of the game, I mean, I said I wouldn't be surprised if we'd ended up doing an emergency podcast, i.e. there'd been a big change somewhere or a big statement or something, whether that be a sacking or, you know, whatever. And obviously we've had this statement on Monday where an anonymous source has told Radio Derby that Paul Warne has the club's full backing. And that, you know, that settled things down a bit. And then a good win last night calms the nerves. But a good win a week ago against Exeter calmed things down a bit. And then it went straight back to innings to go on Saturday night. And I think that's the summary of the season. You can't really judge this Derby team properly because it's Jekyll and Hyde, to use a cliche, isn't it? In terms of the results of play. And yeah, who knows which Derby you're going to see turn up every game. But performances like last night are great. Yeah, it's Northampton, a fifth from bottom, but people expected them to thrash Cheltenham. You know, Cheltenham hadn't won a game all season at that point.
Hadn't even scored a goal.
No. I mean, they've now gone on to turn a little bit of the corner, perhaps. They've had they've put a few more points on the board. But so it maybe doesn't look quite as bad. But yeah, you can't go into these games thinking you are guaranteed 3 points. And in that sense, if we sit here and go, oh, well, it was only Northampton, does that then make us a bit hypocritical?
Yeah, quite possibly, Jack. And Gab, I want to get your sense on the statement that, you know, Jack referenced there about the club has the full backing, or well, Paul Warren has the full backing of the club. Your supporter, Gab, of a team that recently pulled the trigger on a manager that was probably unjustly sacked.
Yeah.
Replaced by a new manager, both of which have Derby connections. But for your neutrality, I'm not going to mention which club this is. I think people can probably figure that out for themselves. But it's Wayne Rooney and John Eustace of Birmingham City. And I guess it's a thing because I often think you can sit there and you can look at managers, right, Gavin? You can say, if you sack the coach, is there a better football coach that's just a better coach than the one that you have? Has the team kind of gotten stale under this manager? There's a lot of factors that can factor into it, right? Chief executives, buddies, and things like that, and whatever, in terms of who comes in and whatever.
By the way, actually, can I just pick up on that point there, Corey? I actually don't necessarily subscribe to the view that the decision of whether or not to sack a manager should be based on who you bring in instead, because I think I see that as a separate process. I think for me, you've got to judge it on, are you happy with the direction things are going in under your current manager? Because I think that otherwise you're always looking for that perfect manager that maybe doesn't exist. And sometimes success can be had by actually building with a manager if you see the right signs. So that's kind of how I would see it.
Yeah. And to that point, Gab, do you think then Derby are right in their situation of keeping Paul Warren and essentially saying your job's safe for a little bit. They're not going to base anything off a quarter of a season, but I guess the malaise has started last February. Paul Warren, do you think he's the right man for Derby at this moment in time? Do you think he's the right man to try to get it right? We know he's had success in League One before. Do you think he can do it at Derby? Do you think he can continue to plot along and long enough where the knives get put away and he can start to build something here? Or is it, do you think there comes a point, at what point do you think people go, this is a bit stale, we need to move on, we need to get someone who can take this team forward?
I don't think it's the right fit, personally, and this isn't sort of being wise based on the start Derby have had. This was actually a concern that I had before the start of the season, because I think if I look at Paul Warren, well, let's go first of all from a stylistic point of view. I think his sides do like to play quite a direct style, and I'm not sure that necessarily lends itself to the quality in this Derby squad. So that would be the first thing. And then I think from a psychological point of view, I see Paul Warren as a better fit for a club like Rotherham, because I think that the way Paul Warren's wired, one of the reasons why he's able to bring people together on an emotional level that very few managers I've seen in my time studying the EFL have been able to do is because he's so honest and so vulnerable. And I think that in one sense, that can really endear him to people and it can build a connection. And I think for a club with the makeup of Rotherham and the size of Rotherham, I think that worked really well. I think at Derby County, I think you've got to have a bit more of an aura about you. And I think that especially for Derby County in League One, where it's a former champion of England, it's a club, I don't know exactly how many you get in the gates. I think it's 23,000 roughly normally.
We're getting close to 30, yeah, 28.
30, sorry.
Yeah, 23 the other night, but it's averaging around 27, 28,000, I would suspect.
27, 28, thank you. So it's a massive fan base. And I think that because of that, there's a certain level of expectation. And I think that with Paul Warren, part of the way he operates is, I feel like he catastrophizes a little bit, to be honest with you. I think he doubts himself. And I think that while that can be a strength in some situations, I also think that can be a massive drawback. And I sometimes get frustrated when I listen to Paul Warren, because he has won 3 promotions from this level before. And yet sometimes I feel like I'd like him to believe in himself a bit more. And for me, I sadly, as much as I really like him and I think he has some amazing qualities and I think he's a wonderful person, I don't think he's the right fit for Derby County, but I do think he can do well elsewhere.
I would echo those sentiments, Geb. I think he's a nice man. I think he's very jovial. He's kind of out there. But I, in terms of the footballing aspect and the managerial aspect, I would agree with your summation there. He probably is not the right man at this time for Derby. I know one of the things that kind of grates on my nerves, Jack, I don't know how you feel, is his post-match press conferences, where he tries to be flippant, or he tries to be sarcastic, or he tries to do these like one-liners. And I think when the more you listen to him and you get to talk to him and stuff, you think, okay, I can understand where he's coming from, because some people just have that personality. But then for the uninitiated, like for instance, like Gab, for you, who might just roll up and just watch a YouTube clip of this guy, you think, what is this guy on? Why is he being rude to this player? Or why is he saying this thing? That sounds bizarre. And to be honest with you, Jack, it was frankly, with his hood up wearing a Pirates cap the other day, is not what I expected a county manager to think. I mean, I expect to see that, you know, with a bottle of liquor in their hand passed outside of a Tesco at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I don't expect people to do that. And I'm not saying he needs to wear a collar and tie. That's his own thing. But I think, you know, sometimes appearances can go, and the things that he says in the press conferences can go a certain way. How do you stand, Jack, on his post-match reaction sometimes? We know that he was a bit combative to Dom Dietrich at BBC Radio Derby. It's a journalist's job to ask tough questions. Where do you stand on that kind of thing? Does that grate on your nerves, or is it something you're just kind of like, nah, I try to read between the lines and get on with it, or you don't listen to Paul Warren at all because it grates on your nerves that much?
I mean, I listened to him. I think it didn't take a body language expert. I mean, this is Saturday afternoon. I'll just hold this up to the camera. Obviously, listeners can't see this, but that was Saturday afternoon, and, you know, doesn't take the... it doesn't take a professional body language analyst to say, you know, it's not great. But I think one thing that struck me just in his first answer, which is quite a long answer to that first question in that interview on Saturday, where Dom asked him, you know, why Derby weren't able to back up the result again from previous Tuesday against Exeter. The amount of ers and erms and I don't know and you know, well, not sorry, not I don't know, it's you know, and kind of stuttering that wasn't normal for him there in a post-match interview. There was a really high level of it and he just didn't seem quite as confident there in delivering his answers, which I thought was interesting. His whole demeanour just felt a bit different. But yeah, absolutely. I think there's an element of, you know, performance that when you're winning, you can back. It's a bit of fun. Everyone's happy. This is great. As soon as you start to lose games, it doesn't, you know, it does great on people because fans are angry full time. And when he's saying every week, well, you know, if James Collins had scored that chance, it'd be entirely different. You know, I'm watching or listening to every game at the moment, and there's a moment where I think, if we don't win, that's what he's going to say. He's going to pick that out and say, if that goes in the back of the net, it's all completely different.
But every manager could say that about every moment.
Exactly.
In a game.
And we're hearing that pretty much every game. And it's things and like Jack, that I think, great.
To your point about his body language, I think getting a body language expert would be an amazing guest on the podcast. Thank you. We'll work on that. But yes, you know, my mom plays a game because she also watches the interviews with Paul Warren, and she plays a game. She finds out Paul Warren's word of the day, because he always says, we were brilliant, we were brilliant, we were brilliant, we were fantastic. And he always repeats this one word. And so she plays this fun game of trying to pick Paul Warren's word of the day, which I always find rather enjoyable.
Yeah.
So Jack, that's, you know, Paul Warren's word of the day is a fun game. I guess people could play it if they were so interested. It does kind of bring your jolly sometimes, especially when you're getting shellacked to the likes of Stevenage at the LabX.
Yeah.
But Gab, there's a point that Jack and I were just talking about off camera as well, and you were included in this conversation as well. It was not, you know, we didn't just leave you out in the cold. But you mentioned there, Jack, banging in the thing. Kind of like, you know, I don't know, Connor Washington trying to get in the Derby County team, banging on the manager's door.
Yeah,
you talked about Paul Warren's confidence, right? And the mentality, and Jack brought it up there. And Jack, I'm not going to take your thunder. You're going to mention this because I'm going to turn it over to you in a minute. But Gab, his mentality of like being an underdog kind of guy, his mentality of saying that he doesn't seem to have a lot of confidence in himself to take the big job. Do you think that's a systematic, like, how do you switch that? I mean, I can't, obviously we don't have a direct line to Paul and we're not his psychologist or yeah, whatever, but you know, I feel like as a football manager, you want to be approachable. I'm not saying that he needs to be super big time and arrogant and walk and not talk to anybody and explain anything, but I think you're right. You know, you picked up on that and I started to think, he does seem to lack some self-belief in himself. And I think if you're a football manager, or especially a football manager at Derby County, or you know, any of the bigger teams in League One, you have to have a little bit of, I wouldn't say arrogance, but you have to have a little bit of an edge to you. You have to be, you know, you can't necessarily be chummy with the players all the time. You have to be able to lay the law down and things like that. And you know, just like in horse racing, you can only give them the whip so much, right? You can only continue to berate them and give them the hairdryer treatment so much. And that's an interesting point you make, Gab, about his seeming lack of confidence in himself and his own abilities. Jack, I'm going to turn it over to you because you talked about something else, and then Gab's going to answer both questions from both of us, even though I didn't ask a question in there. But I'm going to turn it over to you, Jack, so I don't steal your thunder.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. So what I was just mentioning in between, you know, if we just had a little moment off the recording, and I was just saying, just recalled something that we talked about when Gab was on at the start of the season, and something I think you wrote up in your preseason predictions as well, actually, Gab, where it's about Paul Warren having that underdog mentality. And that is a key thing, I think. So see, that works at Rotherham. When you're at home with 30,000 fans behind you, that underdog mentality doesn't align. And I wonder whether that, I mean, it certainly could go some way to explain might have done better until the last couple of weeks, but certainly before the last international break, Derby were doing much better away from home. For example, I think the style of play lends itself, the style of play that Paul Warren wants to implement lends itself to being the underdog still in a lot of ways. And I think that's maybe part of the issue. Whereas last night, they went for it from minute one. The shackles were off. You had Max Bird and Corey Smith pushing up. I mean, Sean Barker on Rams TV was saying that, you know, at times they were playing in almost centre-forward positions. And meanwhile, you had Connor Washington dropping back into fullback areas to win back the ball, and that hard work, that everybody pushing. And then when you get the ball, you know, people flying forward. And that confidence was there in that style of play, which we haven't seen. And I wonder whether the sitting in, let's get a goal and then try and just cling on to the lead. Some of that, I think, might come back to that as well, that lack of confidence. Because it's happened a few times, and a couple of times have been punished for it, sitting back on a 1-0. A couple of times they got away with it. But yeah, I wonder whether that has an effect.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the home form and the away form's kind of flipped, hasn't it? At the start of the season, it was great, good away from home and poor at home. And then more recently, you've dominated a couple of the home games and maybe struggled on the road.
But yeah, it's flipped in the last couple of games, hasn't it? And I think there's been a change in style and being that bit more confident is what has struck me just looking back at it.
Yeah. And that's encouraging that Paul Warren's shown that he's been able to do that. And I think in terms of mentality, I agree with you. I think one of the things Warren did at Rotherham was he created this you know, quite a homely culture where players treat each other like family, I suppose. And, you know, you hear story. I spoke to a Rotherham fan quite a lot during his time there. And you'd hear stories of players giving each other lifts to different parts of the country to, you know, help out. And it's that kind of communal sort of spirit where people would sort of do things for each other off the training ground. And I think that's, I don't want to underplay that as a valuable thing at a higher level. But the sort of, how would I describe it? This thing of I'm going to sit in this dressing room and get everyone to write down on the board who you're doing this for. I think that way of working, for me, I think of it as a kind of a fairy tale film where it's the underdog trying to get a result against, you know, it's the Goliath trying to get a result against David kind of thing. And actually, I don't know if I'm right in this, but, you know, maybe players that are playing for a team that's expected to challenge for promotion, I'm not sure inspiration is as big a thing that they need, because really that what they're right. probably looking for is more technical detail and competence on the specifics, and someone who really knows their stuff right down to the last bits. Maybe Paul Warren does, but I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure about that personally. So I think that it's a case of his strengths not being as significant in this type of context, and also possibly some of his weaknesses being a bit more exposed.
Yeah, I would say it's, as you say, it maybe is a little bit fairy tale. I mean, I've mentioned this before. I mentioned this in the summer with the recruitment, where I was at an event where he was talking and he said, you know, most important thing for him recruiting players is the character of the player and then kind of, you know, being a good part of the dressing room, which kind of feeds into what you're saying about creating that atmosphere. Now, when you're recruiting players, if you're turning down a player that's a better player for someone who's going to fit in and maybe slot in straight away, there's a tolerance there and there's a balance. I think if you've got someone who's completely, you know, say chalk to the rest of the squad being cheese in terms of personalities and it isn't going to fit at all, then yeah, absolutely. But there needs to be that bit of flexibility there. I think having people that you think are 100% your kind of people, nice guys, and only signing them is maybe Maybe just too idealistic, basically.
Do we also, guys, do we need to have a conversation about the age profile of this Derby squad? Because it is a very old old squad.
It's not as bad as last season, but that was easy to
Okay.
do. But yeah, that is probably worth doing. I mean, I'd say something we've said is, you struggle to see with the signings brought in, and I guess to an extent, it's maybe the nature of bringing in players on frees from a higher division. But you don't see a long-term plan with it, do you? Because you're signing 30, 31-year-olds, but yeah, they're dropping down. They've been good at the championship level, perhaps, but they're coming in, they'll do a job for a year or two, and there'll be the same level of churn in the squad next summer, the summer after, as long as you keep doing that.
And Gab, that is an important point to make because the age profile is still skewed. Like Jack said, it's better than what it was last year. But when you look at the fact that it's all likelihood Derby will sell Max Bird and Aaron Cashin in January because their contracts are up in June, and you might as well get pennies rather than nothing for them. There are very few players I would think that are in the ascendancy of their careers that are, following an upward trend. Ryan Nyambe is one of them. He's only signed till January. They need to get him locked up long term. And
Well, that's the thing, Corey, because you had, if my memory serves, you had a really good generation coming through 3 or 4 years ago,
we did.
and then maybe more recently it's dried up a bit in terms of the academy.
The academy's been completely gutted since the administration. The big teams were poaching, basically poached. Amari Kellerman was one of those players that was Derby's super prospect in the youth academy. He's just signed a new long-term deal at Villa. He's playing in the Europa League. He played in the summer series here in the States in preseason and is very much part of Unai Emery's, I guess, thoughts, not in the first team, but on the fringes. And so, I wouldn't expect anything, Gab, from the academy for 3 or 4 more years. Matt Hale he's come in from Southampton. He's rebuilding it. And I think the expectation is it's just not going to happen. And I think the players that we're playing through now, Dejune Brown played last night for Derby, played a few minutes in his first league game. He played some early in the cup. But,
Is that not a
those.
concern then, Corey? Because if you've not got that
It's a
natural
massive
influx,
concern. It's a massive concern. But, Gab, you're a football guy who's been around a long time. You can't just grow a youth prospect overnight, right? You can't, not to say that you're old, Gab. You're probably younger than most of the players in the Derby squad, so that's okay. I'm not as lucky. It takes a long time to continue to grow these youth players. And I think where Derby's going to have the success is they're going to have to go the Luke Plange and Malcolm Eboué route, where these players are cast offs from Premier League teams or League One teams, players like a John Jules, who obviously is on loan, but players who are trying to rebuild a career or are youth players, but he's a
Well,
50th ranked
let me
prospect at
tell you.
Arsenal, and they go to Derby, and they're ultimately going to be potentially getting more playing time. Sorry, Gab, go ahead.
I think that's a really interesting point. I think we've hit on something really important there because we've just touched on the natural influx of talent not coming through. And then I think you could get away with that if Derby County were a really smart club that was able to pick up and identify talent. And that's probably an area of the club which from the outside I would probably question, because I think I look at a lot of the signings that were made, and I think they were very surface level signings that anyone with a vague interest or knowledge of football could probably have made. Someone who's won promotion from League One before, someone who's got a lot of championship experience, very obvious signings. The problem is, obvious doesn't generate value. It might be helpful as part of a component in a squad, but I think if you just go for the obvious signing every time, A, you can miss that little bit of youthful exuberance, that injection of spark that you sometimes need in a team, but also to generate the value in the squad, the saleable assets. That's where you've got to be imaginative and you've got to be able to be data driven. You've got to have someone who's got an understanding of the different youth circuits. I'm not sure that's there upstairs at Derby County at the moment.
It's not at all. There's no real use of data, and that's and all of that to look wider. And if you go back to what, not the summer just gone, but the one before, when they were straight out of administration, had to build a squad from 5 players in 4 weeks. They were going to have to rely on contacts and make some obvious signings that they could get because they didn't have time. They've had I mean, Mark Thomas came in what, February, March, which was a lot more time than they had, say, you know, again, previous summer. So that gave them time. Warren had been in for a while. And this is where, you know, that are we going to finally get the, you know, a chairman or someone implemented? Are we going to get that football knowledge on the board? You know, director of football or someone? Does that need to be there? Most likely, because as I say, at the moment, where's the long-term vision? Because you've not got an academy. You've not got somebody going round and looking at anyone who's just about to be released from a different academy and picking them up.
And Jack, by the way, you know, there might be some people listening to this saying the long-term vision is to get promoted this season. Sheffield Wednesday got promoted last season. And look at where they are. So if you don't have a vision or a direction of where you want to go, I think it's a massive problem.
It is. I mean, long-term in my head is, you know, five-year plan or something, you know.
Sure.
It's multiple seasons. I mean, that's the way you do it sustainably. You look at someone like Brighton, and I'm not saying we're going to do a Brighton because, yeah, we're not going to go from League One to Europe in a decade, most likely. But you look at what they've done or what someone like Brentford have done, where they've been really smart with their recruitment.
Mm.
They've looked in kind of places where you wouldn't think to look, found some gems, brought them in, they've thrived, they've sold them on. And the key thing that someone like Brighton do is they have the next one on the production line ready to go. So they sold McAllister, sold Caicedo in the summer. In comes Billy Gilmore, who's already had a year to bed in.
Mm.
That's you know, maybe something that you can't do to the same level in League One, of course, but you can take the ideals from there and try and implement some of that, because at the moment it feels like we're about as far away from that sort of thing as we could be.
Mm. Yeah, I've kind of heard on the grapevine that one of the reasons Warren was appointed in the first place was because he came across well in the interview and he sort of liked the cut of his jib. I like the cut of Paul Warren's jib, by the way. I think he's a great person, but it does seem like the big decisions aren't made with like a real thought process of where the club wants to go. And I think that's that makes it tough time, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Going back to the age, I did a thread last season looking at the age profile and the like squad sizes and things. And I've not managed to replicate it. I'll do it at some point and tweet it out in the next couple of days. Now, last season, we had the second oldest average age squad in the league, 27.2 years old, and then Sheffield Wednesday were the only ones ahead at 28.1. Now, we say Derby have reduced it a bit. Looking at the same data on Transfer Market, which was the best one I could find at the time, they've got a table with them all, Derby's is still at 27.1. So we say they've reduced it because it looks like they have on the surface with, you know, 38-year-old Curtis Davis, 35, 36-year-old Richard Stearman, 34-year-old James Chester going.
Yeah.
But they've added more players closer to that prime age bracket. Absolutely.
It's a lot of 30-year-olds, isn't it? It's not necessarily veterans at the end of their career. Yeah.
Yeah. So the concern last season, and something we banged on about, and people fed up with me saying, I'm sure I sound like a broken record when I say this, but last season there was only one outfield. There wasn't an outfield player between the ages of 23 and 28 in the first team squad at the start of the season. Now, you had Tom Barkays, and he was 29, has since turned 30. But all the others were 22 or younger or 30 or older. This season, they've added people like Joe Ward, who is 28, and things like, you know, players like that. So they have addressed that prime age bracket. Like, I guess in terms of average age, if they've added a few more to the squad, which they have, because they've got 26 players, according to this, rather than the 22 they used last season, and are more in the middle in terms of squad sizes when you look at League One, rather than having the smallest squad, the joint smallest squad in the league, not the smallest, then, yeah, you can see average age is an imperfect thing. They've, as I said, they've added some in that kind of late 20s and still in that sort of prime. But in terms of early mid-20s coming into their prime or saleable assets, I mean, the only one I can think of really this summer is Niambi, who, you know, if we've got a losing
Yeah, and
game.
he's been a he's an exper he's quite experienced, isn't he? So
Yeah, he's very experienced, but he's still only, he's 25, so as I say, he's kind of in his prime.
yeah.
But most of them are kind of at the very end of their
But
prime at
he's
best.
got 8 years of championship
Exactly. So
experience.
he's
Yeah.
great because he's experienced, but also young
Yeah.
enough to last a few years to be timed out, isn't
And
he?
the
But
unfortunate
it's
thing is, Gav, he's only signed till January.
yeah.
So he's out the door in January. Derby's going to lose him for free. He's been one of our top performers since he's kind of signed on. And if we don't get him soon, he will go to a championship club. And then when you talk about the long-term gap of trying to identify targets on the long-term plan, Derby turned down £3.5 million bid from Brighton and Hove Albion in summer for Aaron Cashin because Derby were desperate for a loan back. Now, Cashin's contract is up in the summer.
Yeah.
If I'm his agent, I'm saying, look, mate, you've got Premier League interest. Why would you be signed with a League One club? Not
European
saying that,
interest.
huh?
European interest, not
Yeah,
just
of
Premier League
course.
interest.
Of course. So, if I'm a player and I'm in that same position, I'm thinking I can play in League One for the next 4 years or whatever it is in terms of my contract if Derby don't move on. Or I can go here and at least I'll get a loan move to the Championship and experience something different with whatever. We know that Hull made a bid, couple of bids from Max Bird, both have rejected. His contract's out of turn in the summer. So if Derby lose those two players, when we talk about prime age players and we talk about prime age brackets, like again, where's the long-term plan? Now, I don't know. We don't know if there's conversations taking place behind the scenes that says, hey, if this happens, if X happens, then we move to Y, right? We know that at Southampton, and we would assume that this would continue, I guess, with Matt Hale being in the academy, if he had any roles in the thing, that they said, okay, we know we can sell Adam Lallana because we can replace Adam Lallana with one of these three players. And then we can, when one of those eventually, it's a Brentford model, right? They know when they sell a player, when they sell Neil Maupay, we're going to sell Neil. Well, we're going to bring in Ivan Toney. We're going
Yeah.
to sell, Saeed Benrahma, but we're going to bring in this Brian Mbeumo guy. And if it doesn't work out, then we have plan B, plan C, plan D. And you're right. I don't see the long-term strategy. And I think, you said you're the outsider looking in and you have questions about the boardroom and where the decisions are being made. And I think us as supporters have those very same questions because there's individuals that are inside the football club that were there under the previous regime that are getting away, I wouldn't say blameless, but are getting away with a lot less blame for what went on to get Derby in this mess than probably what they deserve. I'm not going to name names because I don't want to cause any undue problems, but I'm pretty sure you can figure out, look at who's still at the club under previous ownership and who's there now, who may or may not be an accountant before they became a chief executive. And then, they're still there and they've still got a lot of influence into the decision making and the long term plan of whatever it is. And I think I try to liken it, Gab, of it's kind of like an Easter chocolate bunny, right? So when you break open a chocolate bunny, it looks delicious, it looks great on the outside, right? It's got the scarf and he's got all the details and he's got the eyeballs and the ears and whatever. But when you crack the chocolate bunny open, what's inside? Nothing. It's hollow. It's a shell. So I'm not saying that Derby's a shell, but I think there's some aspects of the football club coming out of administration that aren't full of where they should be in terms of things, right? In terms of the front office staff, in terms of doing these. I know they talked this week about having people onto the executive board and adding these things. I mean, we had an academy direct. We're starting to rebuild the academy. We're starting to rebuild like the scouting system. We're starting to rebuild these things, but there are gaps in this football club. There are still, hollow areas, so to speak, of the chocolate bunny that have yet to be filled up with nice mousse goodness or whatever you want to have in your chocolate bunny, right? It's not a Cadbury's cream egg where there's stuff in the middle. It's a hollow chocolate bunny in places. And I think that's one of the frustrating things for us. I don't want to speak for you, Jack, but I'd like to get your thoughts on it is, for me, like, I'm pleased that the football club's been saved. That's fine. It's all well and dandy and whatever. But at some point, I think we have to look forward, right? I can't say, oh man, 2 years ago we nearly went bust. Like,
Yeah,
that's fine.
absolutely.
15 years ago, Bournemouth and Brighton were sending buckets around to save the football club, and now they're both in the Premier League. So it is what it is. You can't always be tied to that element of your history. And it just feels like sometimes that we need to look there and say, what is the long-term plan? What is this going to achieve? Where are these prime age players coming? And Gab, you studied the EFL in great detail. Prime age players in prime positions costs money. Derby doesn't have a
Course.
lot of that, so I can't go to you name me a team. I can't go to any team and say, oh, Portsmouth, I want Colby Bishop, because one, they're gunning for promotion. He's a prime age player, I think. If not, I'm going to look silly, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? You want those kind of players in those positions. They cost money. And then you're not looking at that because you're thinking at the same time, well, we're Derby County. We don't need to be signing players from Stevenage. We don't need to be signing players from Shrewsbury. I think there's sometimes with that, you know.
Well, no, I was just going to add to that. But you say Derby don't have much money, but they've been willing to spend big on wages. Like, you know, some of the players that the club's brought in, they're not coming to Derby for peanuts, are they?
No. And there aren't the same restrictions on paying transfer fees this summer that there were the first summer. Some of those are lifted. So you could, in theory, pay a little bit of a transfer fee someone who wanted slightly less in wages, and it be, if it worked out, cheaper net. There is that little bit of flexibility. But
and
so
if you remember, Jack, in the summer, David Clowes did say that he believed that he gave Paul Warren a very competitive budget in this division to be able to be successful and achieve. And that's not to go splash millions around. You know, that's balancing wages and transfer fees and agent fees and that little, you know, in the FIFA career mode where you have to drag
the slider. Slider
to how much money you want and whatever. You know, it's kind of doing one of those things. And so it's just, I think, yeah, there's lots to be grateful for as a Derby County supporter, but I think there's also a lot of things that are incredibly frustrating. And I think we're starting to turn our focus back to, as we were talking off air, we're not talking about amortization. We're not talking about finances. We're not talking about fake sheiks and things like that taking over the football club. We're looking at matters that are occurring on the field. But I think it's important also to note that the academy is not anywhere near anything, you know. You have a category A academy, is it, Jack, or a category one academy of the one
yeah,
of the
so
academy what, levels in England, but there's nobody there that's like any good that's going to be breaking through. So
yeah, what they've said on that was that they're committed to maintaining the top level academy, haven't they? David Clowes said that at the end of last season, and that's great. But if it was decimated, if you know other clubs were circling and getting the likes of Amari Kellyman. Whilst they're in administration, if the top talents are gone, it takes time to build that back up, even if you maintain that Category 1 academy. Because, you know, it was players who were below the under-18s even that were being, being poached at that time. But
I would say maybe, I don't know what you guys think about this, maybe a strategy of looking at under-21s pickups, so players that drop out of elite academies. I would think that would be the route to go for Derby.
Yeah, especially certainly shorter term whilst that lower academy builds back up.
You look at someone like 18, 19, 20-year-olds that sort of get released from the Premier League academies. I think that's the gold.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'd say Malcolm Adeyemi, for example, was at Arsenal, got released, went to, I think, it was Arsenal, it was one of the, yeah, it was Arsenal, went to Rangers, got released there, then we picked him up when he left Rangers. And within the season, by the end of the season, he was getting his Palace move. Now, if we were a club in a normal situation at that point, you know, and could have tied him down to a new contract and sold him on, that's then what you want to do. So I think that's certainly an option. Just going back to what you're saying, Corey, about the fact that we're talking about this rather than amortization and stuff. On the one hand, it's nice because we're talking about things that normal football clubs talk about.
Oh, I agree. I wasn't saying it's not nice.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, I think the balance between the we still have a club and the let's have some ambition. From my perspective, it looks like this, really. So When things are going badly, when we have a bad result, say the loss at the weekend, I look at it and go, I'd rather have this where we're playing than not have the club at all. So what it means is when we lose, I'm less annoyed. And there's more perspective to it, bigger things.
Are you less annoyed though, Jack? Because sometimes you text me and you seem kind of annoyed.
Yeah. No, but from the perspective
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And you know that I'm always annoyed, so it's okay.
Yeah. From the perspective of, like, I'm annoyed from a Derby fan perspective, but it doesn't, because my life is football, right? That's what I do, study and everything. It doesn't affect my weekend in the same way it used to. I can compartmentalize it a bit more. And there is the argument to say, well, you know, League One's better than playing on a Sunday League park, which is what it could have been. But at the same time, it's not just Football League status that's saving the club preserved. It's being in a position where we can be ambitious to strive on to get back up to the championship, for example, and that be a realistic goal. So that's another thing that's been saved. Of course, League One's better than being in the Isthmian League or whatever it is, you know, Midlands Central League Division Two or something. But that doesn't mean that we can't be striving for the promotion. As I say, if that doesn't happen, it gives us that little bit more perspective. And say the last day of last season, yeah, it was annoying dropping out of playoffs on the final day. I got over it much quicker than I would have done a few years ago. Because at the end of the day, you know, I come back to a Carlo Ancelotti quote, which I've mentioned before to a few different people, where he called football the most important of the least important things. And I guess for a lot of match-going fans and a lot of people who spend their hard-earned money, we get obviously really passionate about the clubs that we support, and we want them to do well and so on. When things aren't going well and we're spending money to go and watch it, of course, we're annoyed. At the same time, I guess there's that little bit more life perspective that's crept in that is tempers the expectation very slightly when things do go wrong. But as I say, that shouldn't be at the expense of ambition. It just, yeah. As I say, it means you don't get quite as depressed when you've got a bad run. It doesn't, yeah. But it doesn't, as I said, doesn't mean that you can't be annoyed about a bad run. That's my perspective on it anyway. That's just my fault. Sorry.
I agree with you, Jack. And as we finish off the podcast, Jack, you talk about ambition there. And this is where I'm going to bring Gavin for the final time before we you know, blow full time on this episode. Yeah, Derby's start to the season, like we said, was, you know, consistently inconsistent. 15 games in, we're sitting just outside the playoffs in seventh position. We'll periodically catch up again throughout the rest of the season, and I'll continue to bring this up to you. And if you get it wrong, I'll crucify you for it. I'm just kidding. but do Derby County, are Derby County going to make the playoffs, Gab? Do you think that there's enough about this team? Does it think enough? We talked about Paul Warren. Maybe he's not the right fit for the players and the motivational aspect and things like that. Do you still think that there's enough in this Derby team to be able to kick on into the playoffs, or are you still unconvinced?
Obviously, I think if Max Bird and Aaron Cashin go in January, that's going to be a big loss, and they're both going to have to be replaced. So that's going to be interesting. I think you're probably going to have to do quite well in the loan market in January, because I can't really see you paying a transfer fee, and you don't tend to get, you know, the free pickups tend to be, you know, the better ones tend to be more in the summer. So loan market's going to be crucial. I would say, based on the quality of the squad, still, yes. I would like to see a little bit of an injection of youthful exuberance into this team at some stage, because I think it could do with a different energy. Obviously, I'm not convinced over the fit for the reasons that we've discussed. But for me, I think that's more of the reason to think Derby will finish in the playoffs rather than the top two, as opposed to the reason to think they'll miss out on the playoffs rather than get in them, if that makes sense. So, I think Derby get top six.
Fair enough, Gab. I will hold you to that. Gab Sutton, EFL expert and journalist. Gab, thanks for joining us on the Rams Review podcast and spending your evening with us. I know it's been a long day of recording for you, but I appreciate you having a nightcap with us. Really appreciate it. Always enjoy talking to you, mate. Keep up the great stuff that you do for the EFL, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Corey. Cheers, Jack, as well. Cheers, folks.
Yeah.
And Jack Ryan, the regular triumvirate that is the Rams Review podcast from Rams Review HQ. Jack, thanks again for your evening and your time this evening and your insights. We will connect shortly as we hopefully have some more cracking episodes coming up. And again, I apologize to the listeners for the irregularity of the podcast in recent weeks. We've been all over the map and everything like that. So we will do our best to remedy that. Jack.
Can I just cover something off as well?
Sure.
So last podcast I was on, we were previewing Forest women, yes. Derby women. That was nearly a month ago now, but I will just say 2-1 win for Derby at the City Ground that day. Two early goals in the first 10 minutes for Derby. Then the game kind of changed. Forest got penalty just before half time. They scored it. And Anna Draper in goal in that second half, just immense, to the point where I am mentioning this 3.5 weeks later, because, yeah, brilliant. And that, you know, that sealed us the win. There was loss at home to Stoke a few days later, and then there's back-to-back 4-0 wins. 5-2 win at Northampton in the National League plate on Sunday. And then this Sunday, back at the Don Amott Arena for the first time since that Stoke game, 2 o'clock kickoff, Derby do play Halifax Women. So if you get yourself down there, tickets, £5 for adults, £3 for concessions, according to the club's Twitter. You know, good afternoon football for those not going to crew. So, yeah, and we'll hopefully, I'll cover some of this in more detail in next week or week after
we
or
will,
whenever.
We will have a, we will, but, yeah. We will be speaking very soon about the UE Rams and their season so far as we aim to get either Amy or another player on to talk about their season. That's a good flag, Jack. That was a tremendous win at the City Ground. But that's all we've got the time for today, chaps. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Really appreciate it. And there's only thing one left to say, and that is up the Rams.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast, or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.